Yo, what's going on? Everybody, what's good? It's been a minute. We're back. Cover Season Sports Podcast. It's your good man, Ollie. I'm here, of course, with my good man, D-Dub. What's going on?
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. And it's been a while. You know, a lot of things have been happening out there. But most recently, interestingly, today, we already found out that J.J. Watt is another victim that's leaving Houston. Ollie, go ahead and give me the details. What kind of situation is J.J. Watt looking at?
Another victim. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, man. It's been a mass exodus of talent out of the state of Texas, man, out of the city of Houston, man. Everybody wants out. We saw DeAndre Hopkins was out last season. James Harden followed up this season. Westbrook. Now, you know, Deshaun wants out. J.J. Watt just got out. It's been crazy, man. Nobody wants to stay in Houston anymore. What the hell is going on? But yeah, man, J.J. Watt, he was a free agent for about a week. You know, he was playing games with everybody. We saw earlier today that he had the Peloton profile, and he named the Browns, the Bills, and another team as his, you know, possible suitors. And, you know, out of nowhere, boom, he comes out with the news, you know, him in the Arizona Cardinals T-shirt working out, saying that, hey, this is the place that I'm choosing to go, you know, continue my career. And, you know, of course, I feel like we should have just all seen it coming, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins really just blatantly just out there on Twitter telling him, like, yeah, come on, let's finish what we started, you know, and all these, you know, subliminal messages, you know, between the two of them as far as him coming out there to Arizona. I mean, I think it's a good move, man. It's a good move for J.J. Watt. It's a good move for the Cardinals, of course. You know, they're now, you know, bolstering their already impressive defensive line with Chandler Jones on the other side, the sack leader last year. They're you know, pretty much building a foundation, man, to really become contenders. I think it's a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, you know, I think it is a win-win for both sides. And one thing I do want to note is this is not, you know, your typical contract where it's, you know, like a four-year long-term deal. This is almost like a Tom Brady type deal in that you got an older guy who knows how to play, who knows that he can make an impact on a game, but he's a lot more injury prone. So, you know, you take a short term deal like this, you know, 2 years, $31 million, $23 million guaranteed. It's good for both teams. One, you can at least guarantee you have a solid player that can come into your system and line up next to every one of those other guys and make a difference from day one. The only thing is, you know, injuries. Injuries is one of the things that's been plaguing J.J. Watt. How many games are they going to be able to get out of him? And that's why I like the short-term deal. If he can sustain his health over the next 2 years, I can see, you know, a possible extension or something coming down the line, you know, maybe for another 2 years. And in that nature, I think this is something that is going to keep on happening. I don't think we're going to continue seeing those long-term deals that we're normally used to seeing. You could, as you've seen,
no more Patty Mahomes 10-year deals, man.
I mean, Patty Mahomes got that, and that was really in favor of the team. You know what I mean? Granted, Patty Mahomes is still a great deal, but it also allowed, that was a real team friendly deal in that it allowed the team to, it allows the team to restructure, and it also allows them to play around with Patty Mahomes' contract and everything. So that was a very team-friendly deal, but it's also a very generous deal. But this right here is very upfront. Granted, you could have went with a four-year deal and you know, stretched out to money, like, you know, to maybe $60 or $70 million, but you can shorten it and see what the lifespan is like in the first 2 years. And if there's that blood is running, and if it's pumping through the veins, and your defense is turning around the way that you thought it would, then of course you can continue putting into it, especially with the way the salary cap has been affected with COVID and everything like that. I think it's a very good deal, especially for Arizona and for J.J. Watt, and I like it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. To me, the most interesting thing, and if you guys paid attention to what I said, I think they're building a foundation to be a contender. I don't think they're contenders just yet.
But it's a good foundation.
We talked about this before the show. I mean, I really like what they got going on as far as the offensive style goes with DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray, the chemistry that they show that they have together. But we talked about this earlier. I mean, yes, DeAndre Hopkins is a top-flight receiver in the league, but if you really look at the numbers, I mean, I think he had about 1,200, 1,300 yards receiving, which is pretty solid, but he only had 6 touchdowns this year. You know, so, like, to me, you need a little bit more. You need a little bit, you know, more from your number one. You look at a guy like Devontae Adams, and yes, I am a little biased because you already know, go Pack, go. But as far as you know, a guy like him, he's getting 13 to 15 touchdowns, you know, a season when he's healthy. You look at a guy like Julio, you know, he's getting 11, 12 touchdowns when he's healthy in a season. You know, even guys like Keenan Allen, like, yo, when he's healthy, he's getting 11, 12 touchdowns in a season. So, to me, I think that this is a start for the Cardinals. I think more will come. I don't think J.J. Watt is going to be the last big free agent that we hear, because now that they see that, hey, do you remember, like, just a couple weeks ago, like,
but you Patrick know, you know Peterson, what I have to, no, I have on, to disagree on. With you on real quick.
No, wait, one second. Just a couple weeks ago, Patrick Peterson was already on his way out. Like, don't forget that. Like, yeah, he was already like, hey, he's seeking, like, somewhere else to go take his talents. Like, he's done with Arizona. And now, like, all of a sudden, all the memes you're seeing everywhere is J.J. Watt, Patrick Peterson, Isaiah Simmons, et cetera, on the internet. So, like, to me, it's like, this is already changing how other people are going to view this team. This is already changing how players see the Cardinals. And this is going to bring more free agents, more stars, you know, or very solid role players to the team.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you on that, but I have to disagree with you on what you said about DeAndre Hopkins. You know, granted, yes, he is the number one receiver, and you know, I think it's because we've been desensitized by the amount of touchdowns we've seen in a game. DeAndre Hopkins had 115 receptions for 1,400 yards last season. That is, can we backtrack? 1,400 yards. Granted, the touchdowns weren't there, but the production was there. He might not have been the number one target in the end zone, but he definitely was the number one target across the field. You see what I'm saying? Sometimes when you are that number one guy,
if the Cardinals want to compete in the NFC West alone, I'm not even talking about the rest of the NFC with the Packers, the champions, the Bucks. I'm not even talking about them. If they want to compete in their
like
division,
I said, I didn't say that they don't need to compete. I just disagree with the statement that you don't think he's a number one guy because he didn't have the amount of touchdowns that DeAndre.
I didn't say that I don't think he's a number one guy. I'm just saying that he needs to do more. If the Cardinals really want to be an impressive offense, he has to do more. 1,400 yards and 6 touchdowns is not enough. It's not enough.
Okay, so but I need more touchdowns. On average, the number one, how many yards did Devontae Adams have last year?
I don't have that information in front of me at this very moment, but I can tell you it doesn't matter because he had more touchdowns. That's what I'm talking about. He had more touchdowns. And you know whose team was in the playoffs? Devontae Adams and not DeAndre Hopkins. You know why? Because they didn't score enough. They didn't score enough when they needed to. In games that they got out
and again,
that they lost, they
he
was
had
outscored.
The same amount of receptions with less amount of yards, but he was heavily targeted and as the number one guy, and he got 18 touchdowns. And you,
how many?
You know, I think of you,
18.
He had 18. 18 touchdowns.
18. I said 13 to 15 is what I want from him. He got 18
okay,
13, this
13,
year. How
13,
many did he had last
15.
Year? He had 15 last year. He's a productive receiver in the end zone. And if you want to be a
Devontae Adams,
yeah. And if you want to
no,
be a,
in 2019, he only had 5 touchdowns.
He was hurt.
Exactly.
He was hurt. What did he have a year before that? Since you want to be out here bringing numerical stats and all that, what did he have the year before that? What did he have a year before that when he was healthy?
The 2018 season, he had 111 receptions and 1,300 yards. 13.
13. I rest my case. My man averages double.
But hold on, the year before that, DeAndre Hopkins was averaging how many touchdowns?
It doesn't matter.
This is what I'm saying. His just because he didn't score the touchdowns you think he needed to score doesn't mean that he wasn't helping the team be productive. Think about it. You had a team with, unfortunately, they still had a Larry Fitz out there. Larry Fitz was, you know, he's barely dragging along, but he's still a presence in a force because of how he plays. You know what I mean? No matter what, Larry Fitz can play. But at the same time, you got Christian Kirk, whose production was going through the roof, and you also have a guy, Kyler Murray, who can run. So when you put that, something is going to give. Now, if touchdowns decrease through the air and you're getting more on the ground, that's good because their run game took a hit when they traded their running back a few years ago. So let you can't focus on, oh, he needs to put up more touchdowns because he can't throw it to himself. He can still put up the yards, which he did, but the touchdowns weren't there because, again, where he's seeing that action on the field, it just wasn't in the end zone for him.
I mean, like I said, I get that. I'm not disputing that he's not a productive receiver. I agree 100%. DeAndre Hopkins is one of the top five receivers in the NFL. Like, I agree with that. What I'm telling you, though, is if you're the number one guy and you ain't scoring touchdowns, most likely your team is not doing that well on offense, bro. You can have all the yards you want, but if you ain't scoring touchdowns, something is wrong. Either the quarterback play is shoddy.
Right, you're right.
Either the quarterback play is shoddy.
The run game was shoddy.
They had a very decent run game. Kenyon Drake has been one of the better running backs the last two or three years in the NFL. He's been really good. Kyler Murray, as you just alluded to, remember, he had, 10 straight games of 100 yards rushing, the first quarterback to ever do that? Like, we get it. So, A, the running game is going well. B, you have a solid quarterback. C, you should be scoring more touchdowns. I don't care who else is on the team producing. I don't care who else has been stepping up. You're supposed to be the alpha dog. You're supposed to command those touches, and you're supposed to do what it do. Stephon Diggs was complaining that he was not the number one guy in Minnesota, right? He was mad. Balls was going to, excuse my term, the football was being thrown to Adam Thielen. You see what I'm saying? He was mad about that, so he got his way out. He went to Buffalo. What did he do? Only became the best receiver in football when he went to Buffalo. But number one receiver in yards, number two in touchdowns. So that's my point. If you and what was his team? Where was DeAndre Hopkins' team? You see what I'm saying? If you want to be the best receiver, I don't care if the yards are there. You got to score. You got to get in the end zone to help your team. Because if you're not scoring touchdowns, most likely your team is not doing well.
You're right. I mean, at the end of the day, that's an argument for any team. If you're not scoring touchdowns, you're not winning the game in general. But I don't feel like his lack of scoring touchdowns was the main reason for why he's not the number one guy. To put up 1,400 yards in a season in itself is number one guy status. That means you got a lot of attention. You put the team in a position to win receiving wise. You're just not going out there and just catching dumps left and right. 1,400 yards is a high, impressive number. And that's something that's not achieved by, second tier guys or anything like that. Granted, his touchdowns this year was subpar. I could get that. But 1,400 yards has only been put up by elite receivers. You're talking about Megatron, Julio, guys like, Brandon Marshall, OBJ. Like, you're talking about categorically, those are number one guys when they put up those numbers. So I think you do have a point there. You know, there is an issue with being in the red zone and not coming away with the points. But there's other factors there. But defensively, I think those, with the addition of J.J. Watt, it'll help them keep some of those guys fresh. Not having to keep their defense on the field so long when you have another veteran like that. You can move some things around, and especially with a guy like Isaiah Thomas, right there behind him, it is going to be exciting to watch. And from the reactions that we've already saw, like you said, with the memes, everybody has this expectation that things are going to change. And with that expectation, it's that feeling that's brewing in that city that something has already changed. Something has, and I think it's going to carry across the other side of the ball too, even offensively. You know, like Nuke said, his homeboy came to join him in the city, so I can't wait to see what's going on.
Yeah, man, I definitely think the defense is going to be improved, man. And like you said, having guys like Isaiah Simmons back there, hopefully they have the funds to maybe even resign Hassan Reddick, who was their number one guy last year in terms of sacks. Bringing that with Chandler Jones, man, I just think it brings one hell of a pass rush to a team that already had a very good pass rush. As I mentioned earlier, man, the NFC West is a different beast. That's probably the best division in football. You know, hands down, you know, with Arizona, Seattle, the Rams, you know,
and the 49ers.
I mean, yeah, like,
I mean, the most competitive. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were the best division in football last year, but
no,
I think that,
no, I mean, it's definitely one of the best, the most competitive. I mean, outside of that, there's not really another division of football that's as competitive as them. I mean, either way you slice it, there's really not another one. The NFC East used to be that, but, you know, they suck now at pretty much everybody. But
that was super
back to the division. Look, everybody in that division, like, is good at something. And to me, if you get the Cardinals and you add in all this talent, you have to make sure that you're better at what those other teams are good at. So, like, you know, you're looking at a team like Seattle. Like, Seattle's really good at running the football, play action and shit like that. You got to make sure now that you're really good at that with Kyler Murray. And not only that, you got to make sure on defense you really know how to defend that. Because all Seattle is missing is an offensive line. You let Seattle go get a couple of big dogs and put them up front and to protect Russell Wilson if he stays there. Like, you're looking right at a totally different team. You look at on the other side, you look at the Rams. They're the number one defensive team in football last year. You think that's going to stop? They got a few guys that they need to re-sign, you know, to keep consistency. But you think they're not going to keep that up with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald?
I mean, we have still yet to see how their offense is going to shape up.
It doesn't matter. You think Matthew Stafford just got traded out there? He went out there. You think he's not going to ball? Come on, man.
I'm not saying he's not going to ball, but you have to understand the dynamic.
They won the division last. First and foremost, they won the division.
They might have won the division.
Hold up. Listen. They won the division last year. They got a lot of pride. They was just in the Super Bowl two seasons ago. And that leads me to the next team, the 49ers. You think those two teams, you think the 49ers, after having a down year, and the Rams, who just won the division, you think they're just going to give up the division? Hell no. These guys are going to come out and hoop every single week. So, Arizona, yeah, you signed J.J. Watt. You have the potential to go get other stars and other very solid role players to join your team. You better make sure that you out here and you about to fight, because these teams are legit. These teams already have foundations to be contenders, literally. The Rams, the 49ers, and the Seahawks in the last 10 years have all been to at least one Super Bowl. In the last 10 years, at least one Super Bowl.
The Cardinals, you're right.
Not even the Cardinals. In the last 10 years.
Oh, no, you're... Well, pretty much. Because was it 2014 or 2015 there was in there?
Nah, the Cardinals...
No, you're right.
If you look at... everybody in that division has a foundation to be a contender, to go to the next level and win the Super Bowl. So... all these moves that the Cardinals are doing, just you gotta be able to put it together, and you gotta be able to fight, because this division is gonna be hard, man. It's not gonna be an easy division. It's not gonna be an easy division to win games, man.
You're right on that. I mean, no, to be honest, especially this division, this was the most competitive division in all of football. You look at the other ones, the NFC East was a joke. NFC North was a highway robbery. We already know who took that. We're not even gonna get into Green Bay just taking everything and running away with it. But the NFC South was a joke. There's only, you know, two teams in there that was really, you know, even competitive. Same thing with the AFC. The AFC North was the only division in the AFC that was really super competitive. And, you know, you have... but when you look at this Cardinals team, you can say, all right, where they were last year, They've definitely, you know, just on paper, they've made some improvements, but it ain't over. They haven't drafted yet. they haven't made any significant off the field moves. So I still think it's a bonus for them.
Yeah, no doubt. I definitely think it's a bonus. You know, I really like the move. Like I said, I think it's a win-win for both sides, especially with the length of the contract. The money that's actually due up front is pretty, you know, basically paying him for $23 million 1 year. You know, that's probably what you're going to end up paying a top-tier pass rusher right now in football right now this season. So, you know, I think the deal works for both sides. J.J. Watt's going to get his bread up front. All he has to do is stay healthy. I think if you're the Cardinals, 12 games make me happy. If J.J. Watt can suit up and play for 12 games, I'm happy. That's all I want. That gives me 12 out of, 16 now, 17 games that my guys can win. So, like, I'll take the chances. Like, so, you know, to me, that's all you really want. You know, he's older. The durability, the surgeries, the, you know, the back issues. Will he make it? 12 games is all I need if I'm the Cardinals.
And with that, you know, we were talking about the Cardinals and how their team dynamic has changed. But there's a dynamic that hasn't changed in sports. And it's only March 1st. We just ended Black History Month. And the first day after, we're already getting news after news after news. The Black community is not doing good in sports right now as far as coaches. I joke about it, but it's a serious topic. At the end of the day, the lack of Black coaches in sports is a misrepresentation of the sports themselves, or diversity, because you have a lot of the NBA, I want to say about figuratively 75% Black, if not more. Same thing with the NFL, you know, high percentage are Black players.
I'm just go ahead and say it. Sports, period. But 90% Black. Maybe 85. I give.
Oh, you know, in sports, hockey, period, players. Hockey
really isn't a sport that they dominate. Even though I think if we really did get on the ice, we would. But I think 85% of all sports is us.
Yeah, we don't dominate ice hockey. But side note. Shout out to the Haitian team that won the roller hockey world championship. Team IET, keep it strong. But black coaches, especially in the NBA. Let's talk about this Atlanta firing of Lloyd Pierce. Ali, what the hell is going on in Atlanta? You got a coach here that's only been coaching for a little less than 3 years with an organization. Granted, they ain't produce shit. They ain't winning shit. But already gone. Already gone. You've had coaches like you had pointed, you know, offline earlier, like Luke Walton. Been coaching in the league and hasn't produced a squizzit of production or anything for any one of his 5 seasons that he's been coaching. Losing record. And he's still coaching. He still has a job. What's wrong, Ali? Can you tell me what's wrong with this picture? Is it me or am I looking at this different?
Nah, man, you're not. Just one example, one glaring example, is the New Orleans Pelicans. Last year, you know, they started the season slow. You know, they had a lot of guys injured, and then of course, as the season picks up, Zion gets back. They start winning games. They look productive. Oh, they have a bright future. And I don't know, they were in the bubble. They had a chance to play for the play-in. And, you know, of course they lose, but Alvin Gentry gets fired. And they get Stan Van Gundy, who talks all this good stuff on the media, on broadcasts, during games. We've seen him in the past with Orlando and Miami. A lot of people forget that Miami team that won in 06 was Stan Van Gundy's team. Like, a lot of people forget about that. So, yeah, like, he has a good track record, but you fired the genius, the offensive guru, Alvin Gentry. Let him go. And this year, the Pelicans are ass. After you had a great foundation set. And to me, it's black coaches don't have leash as long as white coaches do. And the best example to me is, like you just said, it was Luke Walton. Like, the Sacramento Kings suck. Like, they suck. And they have talent. They got Tyrese Halliburton, who's, you know, has a chance to play for Rookie of the Year this year. De'Aaron Fox, who they just re-signed to a 5-year extension in the offseason, who I think is one of the better young point guards in the league. Marvin Bagley is up and coming, but you still suck. There's no clear-cut evidence of development. There's no clear-cut evidence of a winning culture, but he's still there. In Atlanta, in Lloyd Pierce's case, yes, the record is obvious. He was 61-126. He was under 500. I get that. But they were building something. You know what I'm saying? They had a foundation. Yeah. They had a culture that they were building. Forget just the basketball team and the organization. They had a culture that they were building in the community that he was. He was. People of Atlanta, people of Georgia saw a coach that looked like them. They're interested into the team. You know, they got a young star in Trae Young who the shit that pisses me off is, we saw it all over Twitter. I'm sure all of you listening saw it too, is that the players got coached by this guy earlier today. He was in the locker room with these guys earlier today, and they had to hear it from Twitter. Your star player, he's literally an all-star. He is a young stud. Your star player had to hear this from Twitter. You're destroying the culture. And yeah,
you're destroying your own locker room.
They're gonna get some white guy to come up, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but they're gonna get some guy who we probably never heard of, like Nate Bjorken in Indiana. And I mean, Indiana, they looked good early in the season. Now they're just slipping and falling because Nate McMillan, who had them balling consecutive years in the playoffs, took him to the bubble with TJ Warren. Think about this. TJ Warren is back to earth this season, okay? Nate McMillan had this man dropping 38 points a game in the bubble, and they fired him. And then they hired Nate Bjorken. I've never heard of Nate Bjorken, have you? So to me, it's just...
Talking about Nate McMillan, he is... you know, one of the current assistant coaches on the Atlanta Hawks.
Not anymore. I mean, hopefully he gets the interim. He gets the interim position, but that might not happen. They might be wanting to go in a different direction now.
You're right. I just, you know, when I see a coach being let go for a lack of production. You know, you look at the numbers and you say, what kind of pieces has he had to be able to bring that team success? And I take a look back and, okay, they drafted well. They got Trae Young. But at the same time, how much talent have they been able to surround him to say that, you know, we've built this team to be star caliber, to be able to make deep playoff runs? And they really haven't. Trae Young has been carrying this team since he's been drafted. And yes, your coaching skills can help the team play. But at the end of the day, when it comes to bringing players onto the team, it's not the coaches that are drafting the players. It's the organizations. You know, who's making those trades for free agency? Yeah, the coach has an ear, if that. But if we look at the magnitude of coaches in the league, right? You got 32 teams and you have 6 black coaches. If the coach only has, let's say, out of the whole organization, when it comes to a draft prospect, if the coach has 10% a say in picking a draft pick, think about that. 6 coaches out of all the league. That's a small margin out of 32 teams. It's a small margin. That means they have literally, especially minority coaches, have no say in coaching. Well, picking a draft pick. But granted, the coaches probably have a little more say. But I'm putting it in perspective that if you're willing to let a coach go because the team is not doing well, y'all haven't drafted well either. Trae Young is what y'all put in play, but what other pieces have you put around him to put y'all in a position of success? You know, granted, you could say it's the coach, but you also need the pieces. That, you know, I think that's something that a lot of coaches don't get, a lot of praise for is dealing with, you know, bad teams. Yeah, you could have a star player, but you still got a bad team. And like you said, you know, just like in Indiana, in the bubble, who would have thought Nate McMillan would have been, you know, let go after letting T.J. Warren throw up numbers like that in the bubble? Who would have thought? You just developed a young player to be a very potential prospect for the future of this organization or even the next organization. You changed that player, you know what I mean? So for Trae Young to come on and then be the player that he is, you still need other players around him to be able to change and bring that organization to the next level. And I don't think Atlanta has been doing him any kind of justice. I mean, Atlanta hasn't been good for, you know, several years now. You know what I mean? So I don't expect the culture to change. I don't think there's going to be a shift in another black coach, especially in a city like Atlanta where the community is very diverse, very African-American, rooted culture in Atlanta, and you don't have another black coach to replace it. You need somebody there that can go in and knows how to win. And you got to be able to give him the pieces.
Agree with that. And I mean, like I said, I mean, the hope, you know, it, with Nate McMillan being an assistant, at least, you know, to bring him in there with, you know, veteran coaching experience. And, you know, like I said, man, there's a lot of guys. You look at a guy, you know, they could even go ahead and interview other guys. You know, you look at a guy like Tyronn Lue, who has great coaching pedigree. And, you know, like the Clippers, look how they went about it. You know, after they decided to part ways with Doc Rivers. You know, what they decided to do was, hey, go ahead and promote Tyronn Lue, who is on the coaching staff, who they know has the coaching experience and, you know, has a good coaching pedigree. And they made that change and they got Tyronn Lue to, of course, become their head coach. And look how that's worked out for the Clippers. You know, they're definitely still one of the better teams in the NBA. So I don't think it's ultimately a bad move if you just go down the bench and promote the assistant coach. And, you know, with him, of course, you know, forget him being black. Give him that opportunity. We just saw the Minnesota Timberwolves a couple of weeks ago after they fired Ryan Saunders, bypass his assistant, who the whole entire locker room was pushing for this guy to replace their coach after they let him go. You know, and they got Mr. Finch. Have you heard of him? Like, I haven't. So, you know, to me, like, you know, it's situations like that, which just show their true colors. And when I say there, I'm talking about the owners and the GMs. You know, like you said, they're the ones who go out and entice these free agents to come on over and sign these checks for these free agents and go after these trades. I think they are equally responsible for the performance of the players. You know, even with the coach being on the sideline, I think you're the one who helps put this team together. So if the coach go, you got to go too. But, you know, the GM quiet. I haven't heard anything from the GM. So it's things like that, you know, it's very sad to see. I mean, you know, like you said, now it's not even six black coaches anymore. It's five black coaches. If you want to tag in minorities, it's seven if you include Borrega in Charlotte and Spoelstra in Miami. So out of 32 teams, you got seven minorities as coaches. That's a misrepresentation.
You know, you were trying to make a comparison. And I found it. I know what you was looking for. you know, about coaches that have been, you know, in the league long, but, you know, granted, they're just because you've been in the league long and you won a few games doesn't mean that you know how to win. And one of those coaches is Mike fucking D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni, at the end of the day, no, I'm saying, but, you know, has coached inside of the league for, you know, over a decade, you know, and you look at his record and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, he had a couple of good seasons in Houston, but that wasn't just because of him. He had an all-star shooter, the number one shooter in the league for, you know, almost 4 or 5 years straight. And, you know, you look what he did with the Knicks, produced squat, but yet he was still able to find a job elsewhere with, you know, the Lakers. And you know, before that, he did Jack Diddley in Phoenix, the first year. They were able to put a squad together, and, you know, from 04 to 06, but you didn't win. But yet you can continue to get hired for more opportunities. This is what I think is the problem. You can let a man who's not of color continue to lose, but a man of color has to continue to show his worth and produce immediately before he can continue to get the next opportunity.
But I think it's hilarious that you use Mike D'Antoni, because let me tell y'all, man, if you ain't from New York, man, you really don't understand the hate people have for Mike D'Antoni, yo. Mike D'Antoni is the former head coach of the New York Knicks, and he was there from...
Fuck Mike D'Antoni.
I think he was there from 07 to maybe 2011 and change. Mike D'Antoni was horrible, okay? And we know the feud he had with Carmelo Anthony, ruined Amari Stoudemire. Knicks fans do not like Mike D'Antoni, all right? So if you didn't know that, now you know. That's a fun fact. Knicks fans hate Mike D'Antoni. But yeah, man, it's unfortunate. I hope Pierce finds another job, because he's a great defensive mind. I'm sure he will. So, you know, it's situations like this that are just unfortunate. I do hope that there can be more black coaches, more minority coaches as a whole. I'm tired of seeing somebody's grandfather on the sideline every single game. I'm tired of it. You know, I really am. I would like to see Becky Hammon succeed Greg Popovich. I'm a big Becky Hammon fan. Yeah. I think she's the GOAT of the WNBA. Like, believe it or not, if you don't know, look her up. But, you know, I think that, you know, those are some of the things, like, I would like to see. That's, like, really, like, I would love to see that. I wish I could have seen Pat Summitt coach in the NBA, because Pat Summitt was the GOAT when I was a little
kid. Right. You're right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you know, I wish I could have seen that, because I know she would have had some teams balling. You know, so it's not just about black men. It's about minorities as a whole. You know, so, like, you know, especially now, it's March 1st. It's Women's Month. You know, like, it's Women's Appreciation Month this whole month. So, you know, like, we would like to see that support, you know, and get more women in sports and head coaches. You know,
right.
You know, I would love to see that. But Cover Season fans, it's been great. Happy to be back. Happy to be making episodes for y'all again. You already know it's your guy,
this
Ollie.
Is nice. And it's your boy, D-Dub. You already know it's time to go. You ain't got to stay here, but you know where to find us. See you later.